Welcome to the Michigan Opportunity, an economic development podcast featuring candid conversations with business leaders across Michigan. You'll hear firsthand accounts from Michigan business leaders and innovators about how the state is driving job growth and business investment, supporting a thriving entrepreneurial ecosystem, building vibrant communities, and helping to attract and retain one of the most diverse and significant workforces in the nation.
Welcome to the Michigan Opportunity, brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Hello, my name is Ed Clementi. I'm your host today, and we're very fortunate and honored to have the Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist II, right?
That's right, Ed. Good to be with you.
Okay, good. Welcome to the show. And I know you're a very busy person, but I'm sure you're very comfortable with podcasts. You might have even done some before, have you?
I actually used to co-host a podcast back in 2013. I co-hosted a podcast called the Wynn Report. It was called The Good Fight. We had a section called The Wynn Report. It was actually when I was working in politics at the time, and it was about kind of the fights in progressive politics around the country and who won and who lost. And our podcast had the honor, frankly, it was awesome and unexpected. We were voted one of Apple's best podcasts for 2013. It was pretty awesome.
So just like you and one other person hosted it, or just you? Or
yeah. So me and a good friend of mine, his name is Ben Wickler, who I worked with at the time, who actually now is back home in Wisconsin, but we were both in DC at the time. And it was a really, really fun experience.
Yeah. And you're obviously a native of Michigan, but a native of Detroiter too, I believe. Right. And I know your mom and dad, your mom worked at GM a long time, correct?
My mother, so I am from Detroit originally, and then I spent the second half of my childhood in Farmington, Michigan. Like, went to Farmington High School, class 2000. And my mother spent her entire career at General Motors. And my father bounced around a little bit in the beginning of his career, but ultimately, when I was 10 months old, he got a job at the Department of Defense, and that's where he retired in 2016.
Did he work here in the Warren area? Was he part of that defense?
He started out at the McNamara building, which is at the corner of Cass and Michigan Avenue in downtown Detroit, and ultimately did transfer to what was then called TACOM, and that's where he finished his career at TACOM.
Yeah, we just interviewed recently the head of the Michigan Defense Center.
Yes.
And so we've had a lot of conversations about that. The other thing that kind of really fascinates me, because I know what I was like at 16, but I think you're much more mature than me. You went into a recreational center in Detroit and started a computer lab. Is that right? Did I read your bio right?
Yeah, that happened, but I'll give you a little bit more foreground. So my mama worked at General Motors. Like I said, she was an accountant, and she ended up striking up a friendship with like the PC tech guy on her floor. And it turns out that he had a side business where he built computers and like sold them kind of custom builds. And so she convinced him to let me work for him. And I'm using work in air quotes because he didn't pay me. But I got a chance to go to this guy's place in Southfield, and he taught me how to build computers. And so the first five that I made, we then installed at a rec center on the west side of Detroit. And so that was that built their computer lab. And then I actually taught a class and taught people how to use those computers and the software. So that was my first job and my first real, professional experience. And it was awesome. And I learned a lot that I still think about every single day in that.
And you were in high school, right? At that time.
Yeah. I was a junior in high school.
At that time. Yeah. I wish I had that concentration at that point. But then you went on to U of M, and I know you've got at least one degree from U of M, or is there, because it confused me, because I see you, and you can maybe help the listeners tell the difference, because there might be some budding kids out there wondering what programs to go into for their careers. But what's the difference between computer science and computer engineering?
Very simple. So computer science is about software, and computer engineering combines software and hardware. And so I was a double engineering major at the University of Michigan. So in addition to learning how to become a software developer and write computer programs. I also learned how to manage and create, you know, micro electric mechanical systems and actually program hardware as well. So I got, I was double major, so I got degrees in both of those things from the University of Michigan College of Engineering.
And on it, I think I read you're also graduated with honors, which once again was not what I graduated with, but...
It's an honor to graduate from the University of Michigan.
So absolutely. I'll take that. Yes, yes. So then it sounds like you went from there to Redmond, which is obviously the home of Microsoft. And I don't know exactly, but I know something about SharePoint. And I think, you know, people in the business world kind of know what SharePoint is. But can you tell people what SharePoint is? Because you help create and write some of the software for it. Is that right?
Sure. So I was worked on a couple of the early releases of SharePoint, what is now SharePoint. And when I was out at Microsoft, I interned there in college, and then I worked there full time for 4 years. And SharePoint basically is an office collaboration tool. So when you're at work, and people know this now even more in the, you know, remote working experience that we've had, but people need to share information and share documents and be able to chat with each other online and comment on and make edits to documents and lists and keep shared calendars. And SharePoint was a way to bring all those things together. And so I got to chance to work on that project early. I was an engineer that was working specifically for big organizations who we wanted to use SharePoint so they could have the best performance. So I worked with, you know, again, huge deployments, U.S. Army, the Department of Defense, you know, Walmart, like the biggest companies and biggest organizations in the world, Shell Oil Company, who were using this software to manage, you know, their work around the globe. And it was really great experience to be able to help grow that to the fastest growing business in the history of the company.
And this more of a geek question, but did you get to meet Bill Gates, or was he retired by then, or what?
No. I actually got to meet Bill Gates. This is something pretty cool. So one of the ways that Microsoft at that time used to really, you know, hook in interns to become full-time employees was that if you were graduating the following school year, they selected a group of interns from that class to be able to go to Bill Gates' house. They called it the Bill G Barbecue. And so I was part of a small number of interns who got to go to Bill Gates' house, which is like on an island, just off of downtown Seattle. And I got to meet him. I got to meet Steve Ballmer. I got to meet all the leaders in Microsoft. And we kind of got to ask him questions and stuff. It was a really remarkable experience. And the barbecue was pretty good, too.
Speaking of Ballmer, you probably, did he go to U of M? I forgot. I know he's from Michigan or Detroit, too.
So Ballmer's from, he went to Detroit Country Day High School and is from suburban Detroit, still has love for Detroit. We're really proud that the Ballmer Group has made significant philanthropic investments in the state of Michigan and particularly in Metro Detroit. And a lot of those investments have been in areas that are, I think, really key to the state of Michigan's future. So we're really proud of that.
Yeah, I have to admit, I'm jealous of all these guys you met so young and how that helped you with your career, too.
I've been incredibly, incredibly blessed and fortunate and lucky to be in the right place at the right time. I do not minimize the role that serendipity has played in my life. And I also can never minimize the role that people supporting me and having my back and making sure that I was able to complete my high school education and my college education. They're, you know, when I think about what helps to make young people successful in higher ed, it's often the helpers. It's the people who are there for, and learning resource centers and helping people organize study groups. And those are staff people who often don't get recognized enough, but they are really critical to the fabric of any university environment. And I was very thankful to be well supported by programs, what was then called the Minority Engineering Program Office at Michigan, which is now the Center for Engineering Diversity and Outreach in the College of Engineering and other programs. So I'm really thankful for that.
You go get to talk to the kids at the college?
I do. It's been really awesome. Being able to maintain that relationship with the college. I also had relationships with the School of Information. I actually was on staff at the School of Information, which has a close relationship with the College of Engineering, for about 8 months before I took office. And I got a chance to, you know, when I was on staff, be the commencement speaker for the School of Information actually in 2018. And so I got a chance to work with a lot of undergraduate and graduate students in that role, as well as some great faculty and other staff members. And so I am thankful to be able to maintain a relationship with the U of M community. And certainly it continues to be a beacon of just really amazing achievement and potential for the state of Michigan.
Well, not to paraphrase what you just said, but a lot of people forget where they came from and who helped them get there. And you've done a good job of looking like you realize where your foundation started.
Oh, without question, I am not presumptuous enough to believe that these are things that I would have been able to accomplish on my own. And I don't think really anyone gets anywhere alone. There's always someone who's supporting and helping and creating a way, breaking down barriers. And I am the poster child for that.
Yeah, no, and your career has exemplified that. And that's an excellent way to put it, too. You went on to become an entrepreneur right after this. So I don't know. That's kind of fuzzy with me. But what did you leave then? Microsoft or what?
No. So actually the first business I started, which was actually with a couple of guys who I'd known since kindergarten. We actually started this while I was working at Microsoft. It was kind of a side business for me. It was called Detroit Intern. And it was actually this internship website where the premise of it was if young people could find internships in the Metro Detroit area, then that would increase the likelihood that they could probably find a job in the area. And if they could find a job in the area, then they would be less likely to relocate to the West Coast to be a software developer. So it was like really premised upon my experience. And so we had myself was the software developer, one of my friends from kindergarten who was an attorney, and another one of my friends from kindergarten who was just graduated from the business school at Michigan. And we worked together on this and launched it actually in December of 2006 or January of 2006, excuse me. And right after I was out there at Microsoft for about 6 or 7 months. And that was my first software entrepreneurial experience.
I know Microsoft and a lot of those IT companies, they really encourage side hustles too, don't they? Like they want you to have some time to be creative too, right? With those kind of things.
It's funny you say that, because I definitely didn't disclose anything. I didn't tell them. I mean, you know, it's like it was successful. It ended up being acquired by the Kellogg Foundation about 6 years later, but. But no, I didn't tell them I was starting a business.
Well, you know, I think now they strongly encourage it. Like a lot of them do, like 20% of your time is for you to be creative in your field or something like that.
Well, Google certainly pioneered that notion of 20% time. I mean, they recognize that engineers need space to create, and that's where some of the best ideas come from. And if you look at all of Google's most profitable products, all of them have come from 20% time. Their advertising products, Gmail, Google Maps, all those things have come from those kind of 20% time projects. And so it is important to give your professionals the opportunity to dream about how to do things differently, and to support that when it has potential. And I certainly learned a tremendous amount from my entrepreneurial experience, both with that one and with the second venture that I started with another group of friends when I lived in Washington, D.C. And it certainly made me a better and stronger professional. And it has informed how I think about the world, how I think about the economy, how I think about taking advantage of access to opportunity, and really wanting to make that more available for more people.
It's always easier to see your path when you look back than ahead. So sometimes,
you know, that's true. That certainly is true. You know, I think as someone who's had a very non-traditional path, to public service, though, what I have recognized is all of those seemingly disparate experiences did actually provide a lot of preparation for public service, even though I was not planning to go into public service. This wasn't something I considered at all when I was in college or even in the early part of my professional career. But the series of my experiences have helped me, I think, be a better public servant because of it.
You're listening to the Michigan Opportunity, featuring candid conversations with Michigan business leaders on what makes Michigan a leading state to live, work, and play. Listen to more episodes at michiganbusiness.org/podcast.
You actually get to, you know, practice what you did, because, like, I know one of the things, I know you've worked a little bit with, I don't know if it's broadband or digital divide kind of issues, but could you expand on that? Because I don't think a lot of people understand the digital divide. That's a big deal for the MEDC to build out the broadband. But do you want to elaborate a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, so to put it succinctly, access to the internet will be perhaps the key difference maker in terms of access to opportunity for people going forward, economic opportunity, educational opportunity, getting better health outcomes, developing stronger and safer communities. Like, internet access can be really critical to all of that. And unfortunately, everyone in Michigan does not have access to the internet today. Either the internet has not been built to support where you live, or internet access is unaffordable where you live, or everyone does not have the digital literacy and skill capacity to take full advantage of the internet that they do have access to. And so this is an issue that I've actually been working on, sort of bridging this internet access gap since I was a freshman at Michigan. I did a research project with a sociology professor, actually, surveying neighborhoods on the east side of Detroit that incumbent providers were not serving, and asking people how much they were willing to pay for internet access, what they would do if they had it in their household, things like that. And so this is very near and dear to my heart, and it's why I'm proud that the state of Michigan, we launched our Michigan High-Speed Internet Office earlier this year to really better coordinate the state's efforts. We had, you know, definitely a lot of people thinking about how to expand access to the internet, working in different parts of state government. And so we wanted to unite and better organize and, frankly, streamline those efforts so that we could be focused on this common purpose of making Michigan the first state for that will have every single one of its households connected to high-speed internet. And to do so, we need to take advantage of this once-in-a-lifetime moment we are in right now, where we have more resources available, or will have very soon, to expand access to the internet in the history of the internet. Like, since the internet was invented, we haven't had this much of an opportunity to get people online. And so we need to step up and meet this moment. And working with the High Speed Internet Office, working with what's going to be ultimately a bipartisan coalition of stakeholders, we know that we can get that done, and Michigan can be a national leader in that realm.
Yeah, I used to be a state rep, and I had Downriver, had Ecorse, Rouge, Lincoln Park, Melvindale. I used to do my office hours in all of them. And I was shocked when I first went to see how long the lines were just for, like, the community computers, because, you know, they would tell me that kids or even adults couldn't file an application without a computer. You couldn't do it on a phone because of the truncated phone, that they couldn't put all their information on it. And that was a real eye opener for me to really try to, even at that time, to support the digital divide, because it was new to me at the time too.
Well, it's absolutely something that we can't take for granted. And I mean, to give you a current example, there are areas of Washtenaw County that just in the last 60 days have been lit up with internet access from an incumbent provider, just in the last 60 days in 2021. So there's still work to do and ground to cover to make sure that everyone, and through what all of us have experienced in the last year with the pandemic, we see the primacy and the importance of internet access for children to be able to learn. I don't think that the delivery of education and instruction will ever be quite the same, because now we recognize that there may be a role to play for connected learning. But in order for that to equitably experience, all kids have to have access.
Yeah, and it's even more than just kids, too. We interviewed Connected Nation Michigan, and they talk about how a lot of telemedicine, healthcare, wearables are all going to play a big factor in the future if you don't have connectivity at some level.
Well, 100%. I mean, imagine if you're a person who suffers from a chronic illness and who lives far away from your specialist. If you have ALS and live in the Upper Peninsula, for example, there are no ALS treatment centers in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And so needing to drive for hours and hours to be able to come and see your specialist. Well, if you have access to a robust, high fidelity broadband, high speed internet access, you can perhaps work with your specialists. And instead of having to come down to see them seven times a year, you only have to come twice because you're getting the support and services and they're able to connect you with the resources and just infrastructure you need to be able to manage your condition. Imagine having strong internet access is an economic development boon for communities. Imagine smaller rural communities in Michigan, many of which have seen renewed interest during this pandemic when people recognize that Michigan is a beautiful place to live that's relatively affordable compared to other parts of the country. And if you combine that with robust high-speed internet access that's available in every household and every home, that leads to placemaking opportunities in smaller communities that perhaps they wouldn't have been available in the same way. And that will spur private investment to be able to deepen the infrastructure, the amenities, and offerings of communities across the state of Michigan. It's a huge opportunity across the board. And that's why we want to be so aggressive here to take advantage of this moment.
Well, I got just a few more questions for you. I know your time is precious, but this has been fun. I'm going to let you get a chance to put on your futuristic hat. So what do you think are the big disruptors beyond things you've already mentioned that, because I know you're doing some stuff with cybersecurity and other issues. What do you think's, what would you tell people to be cautious of in the future or how to adapt, that kind of thing?
Well, I think certainly as the world becomes increasingly connected and as we have more people online and more devices and infrastructure connected to one another online, we will need to be very mindful of the security and privacy implications of that reality. And that is why I'm very proud that the state of Michigan, again, and there's a bipartisan consensus that has been present here in the state for a number of years now that has sought to help have Michigan be a leader in training the cybersecurity workforce of today and tomorrow. We have, you know, nationally recognized programs at places like Wayne Community College District and Eastern Michigan University that are training some of the strongest professionals in cybersecurity in the world. And we've seen reports from like the federal government, for example, saying that they are thousands of positions short as far as the number of cybersecurity professionals that we need for national defense and homeland security purposes, for example. And so Michigan has a chance to be a leader here. And I really want our state to lean in. We can build out and build upon things like the cybersecurity range. I've been able to meet students across Michigan who have been participating in cybersecurity exercises and competitions and awarding some of them from all over our state. So I'm really proud of that opportunity. I also think we have a chance to really, I think, in the state of Michigan, reimagine and expand, frankly, who has access to entrepreneurship and who has a chance to have their ideas be invested in. And so we have that. That means that one, ensuring that people know that their ideas can have a chance to be successful here in Michigan. It means helping to expand our capital markets, the type of capital that's available to a broader range of people, so that Michigan can really, I think, be the state that leads the nation in new business starts coming out of the pandemic. And one of the opportunities from an equity perspective that presents is that, you know, studies have shown over the years that people of color are actually more likely to have a business idea that they want to start. And if we make more types of capital available to more types of people, that's going to lead to more opportunities for us to get those unicorns based here in Michigan and for our economy to grow exponentially. And so we're excited to invest in those opportunities. And then the last thing I'll leave with is that I think that we all now are more sensitive to the connection between public health and our economic well-being. And so we need to make sure that we invest in both of those simultaneously. And so I'm looking forward to being creative in how we do that, because healthy people are people who can then engage in commerce, who then can engage in research, who then can engage in supporting their communities and placemaking. And so we need to connect these together and think about them as one and the same.
Oh, excellent. points. And I'll tell Dr. Ivory, I used to be a trustee for Wayne County Community College, so he'll be glad to know you plugged them.
Dr. Ivory's been a really great ally to this administration and to the state. Dr. Ivory also is a member of the Michigan Coronavirus Task Force on Racial Disparities, which I chair, and him there being representing community college educational leadership. And they've been an important anchor in our state's COVID response, and as well as in our state's both economic development strategy and workforce development strategy. So I applaud him and the whole Wayne County Community College District.
I got two books, but I can't reach him from here. He's written a lot of books too. But the last question I think I'll ask you, it's a simple one, but you know, you've lived in Michigan, but you've also lived in other states now and districts. What do you like best about living in Michigan?
I'm a Midwest kid at heart.
Maybe you're the lieutenant governor. Hang on, I don't want to get you in trouble.
I'm a Midwest kid at heart. Look, I've lived on both coasts. As you said, I lived in Seattle, Washington. I lived in Washington, D.C. I was on the West Coast for 4 years, on the East Coast for 5 years. But ultimately, you know, I chose, my wife's from Southfield, and we chose to build our family and our future here in Michigan. We could have lived anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world. And we made an affirmative decision. We didn't come home because we needed to. We came home because we wanted to. We brought our 10-month-old twins back home to Detroit, where we live, to raise them. This is the place that bore and bred and made me who I am. And it's because of it's in the dirt in Michigan. This notion that we are people who know that we can make real things and make things real. I'll tell you what that means. Make real things means that, you know, we have the ability to create what others think is impossible here in Michigan, whether it's the imagination that led to defining mobility for a century, to the imagination that led to creating Motown and electronic music. Like, we have the ability to make things that other people can't imagine. And then to make things real means that we have amazing, I think, storytellers and cultural leaders and culture shapers here in the state of Michigan. And just being in that vicinity, I think, helps to spur the creativity that's within everyone. And so I think those two things put together mean that people who call Michigan home have more potential to change the world than do anywhere else. And so I wanted my children to experience that and be infused with that as they came into they came of age and came to themselves. And so that's why I think Michigan is the best place to be and always will be.
Well, I don't think anyone else could say it the way you did. That was really great. And I don't even know you had any time with three little kids at home, probably. I would imagine that your time's very precious. But on the other hand, you got a great compass heading. Keep your energy and your momentum. And once again, we had our guest on today, Lieutenant Governor Gilchrist, Garland Gilchrist II. Appreciate you being here today. And it's been a lot of fun talking with you.
Thank you, Ed. And I want to thank especially all of the professionals at the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. You do a great job of positioning Michigan for success. And I thank you for the leadership that you show, for the services that you render, and for the impact that you have on our state.
Nice to meet you, too, by the way. Thank you.
Certainly. Take care.
The Michigan Opportunity is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion.